I'm scared to close my eyes. I'm scared to open them. I'm gonna die out here.
Welcome to the Fear Response Podcast. We are so happy to have you.
Yes, welcome back, everyone. I am John, and I'm a trained youth therapist, and I now oversee a group of youth therapists.
I'm Jenna, and I'm a nurse with a specialization in mental health and addictions. And we are here to talk about a vintage classic. We are here to talk about the Blair Witch Project. So, John, hike much?
Yeah, that's a good question. As you know, I do some extremely light hiking, but not much. I certainly don't have the shoes for it.
Right.
You know, I don't hike enough that I've made purchases relating to hiking.
Got it. But we do live in an area that I think that even if you're a hiker light, every one of us has still had experiences in the woods, and we can kind of think back to those. I myself, as you know, I am a hiker. I enjoy hiking. I do it a lot. I have the shoes.
Been there, done that, got the shoes.
So that said, even despite having a familiarity and a yen for the woods, I enjoy it. I like to go out there. I seek it out. Despite all that, I'm still wary of them and recognize them as a scary thing.
Yeah, I think one thing that would be my downfall, if anything went wrong in my hike, which again are very light, is that I would not be prepared to spend any more time than I was expecting in the woods.
No, I think that if I got lost, it wouldn't be about trying to find food or anything. It would just be about trying not to die until I got found. So even if I'm found like on death's door, as long as I'm not dead by the time I'm found.
Yeah, you're not going to go into castaway mode and start improvising weapons and stuff.
No, I'm not. I'm going to do that thing that your phone does where you go out of service where it says, would you like to ping a satellite? And I'm going to be like, yes.
Yeah. Hey, I mean, we've got some advantages these days.
Yes. And I was telling you about this the other day, but like when you go backcountry camping, which you've done campground camping where there's like...
I'm surrounded by people.
Yeah, you're surrounded by people and there's rangers, like park rangers there that you see walking around doing maintenance, that kind of thing. There's an office you can go to like rent life jackets and that kind of thing. There's people around you that you can seek out if you didn't need any kind of help. But when you go backcountry camping, you have to hike into the camping spots. It's still in a park, or at least the kind of camping I've done is still in a park.
National park, let's say, like, which are kind of like just protected conservation areas, essentially, for anyone, you know, not in our context.
Yes. And then they're also maintained, right?
Right.
You still need to go into like the station and you tell the park rangers, they ask you where you're planning to camp. However, it's also possible someone got there before you. You don't know. Someone else might just be in that spot you were hoping for, and you might need to go find a different one.
Oh, okay.
So you tell them where you're planning to go. You tell them your license plate, and you tell them who knows that you're there, and you give numbers and contact for family members so that if you don't show up, they can be like, oh, yeah, we know where this person went. We know which car they were in and that kind of thing, so that they've got a place to start if they had to go searching for you.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I think that our heroes in this story did not play by those rules.
Unfortunately, for we are here to talk about the Blair Witch.
Which seems to be much more about camping than it is about witches, right?
Yeah, I mean, certainly that could be a criticism leveled against this movie, maybe by a newer generation too, who just weren't there to experience what the Blair Witch was.
Yeah. And I mean, I guess I should ask you, like, when you watch this movie, do you feel the presence of a witch or not?
I think I do. And that's probably because I'm open to suggestion when it comes to film. I don't have a difficult time suspending my belief in certain ways. And I think as soon as we're entering the woods, I can get on board with a witch, a hag, anything like that. Mm-hmm. And I think it speaks to just a lot of groundwork that's already been laid by folk horror, by fables, fairy tales. To me, witches are almost of an old type of magic. That's the way I see them. And so the woodland stuff fits in perfectly. So I do feel the presence of the witch, But if someone was saying, well, you know, it's kind of weird because there's no witch in it, I understand what they mean. I just don't agree.
See, you know what? I find this movie scary, as we've said. I don't really feel a witchiness. It doesn't feel, this doesn't feel like a supernatural movie to me. Not that that doesn't take anything away from it for me, because like I say, I still find it scary. But yeah, I don't really feel the presence of a witch in the same way. So that's interesting that we kind of differ on that.
Yeah.
With regards to scary stuff happening in the woods, getting lost in the woods, are you aware that our Uncle John, your namesake, actually went missing and needed search and rescue?
I don't think I was aware until I think you might have actually told me that recently. And I was surprised initially, but then it's like, oh no, Uncle John, I could see that having happened to him. He likes to be out in the woods. He likes to go fishing. He likes to do things like that.
Can you imagine, though? He was gone for like a day and a half or something. Like, Mom talks about it, saying that they didn't have any idea where he was out with someone else, like a friend.
Oh, okay.
They didn't have any idea where they were. And then they found their canoe having been pulled up onto the shore.
Yeah, not like wrecked on the side.
Yeah, like with a bunch of holes in it and bloody clothes. She said that once she knew that the canoe had been pulled up onto the shore, she felt fine. Because that meant that he had done it with intention and gotten out of it and left it. So,
and I think you raised a good point, too, because there are people who enjoy doing stuff like this, and I'm not necessarily one of them. But, you know, for people who were into this stuff, as Uncle John is, back then, there wasn't really a way to communicate like we've got now. So if your trip got extended or you spent more time in the bush or you got diverted somehow, but you weren't in danger, there was no way to let anybody know. People just had to wait.
Yeah, even if it was something really minor, like, you know, like maybe I slept in and then it started raining. So then I missed a whole day. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
Like, it could be something as simple as that. But I mean, he is alive and well and was rescued just fine. But yeah,
still loves doing all that same stuff.
Can you imagine, like, if you were in Mom's shoes and they were just like, oh yeah, Jenna went for a hike with her husband and never
Nobody's
came back.
Seen her. Now I turn around
and
find I
am lost in the woods. And it's like a day and a half later, you'd be like, oh my God.
That would be pretty jarring.
Yeah. So putting us in that headspace, we could talk about the Blair Witch Project, because that's a really important thing to kind of to think about when we're talking about this movie is the woodsy aspect is a big part of the fear. But another big part of the fear, which I think is something you need to appreciate now, even though you can't experience it the same way that you would have at the time. But in 1999, there was this viral marketing campaign for this movie.
Right.
That brought it to the forefront of everybody's mind in a really unique way that you probably couldn't replicate now.
Yeah, and I'm sure we'll talk about that more at the end, but I do remember when this movie came out, I think I would have been close to 10 years old. And I do remember Dad taking me too, which is another funny thing. But I just remember they had me hook, line, and sinker with anything that I was exposed to with the viral marketing. I probably wasn't on the internet.
No, just there's probably commercials and stuff, I guess, right?
Yeah, or even just the posters and
stuff. Yeah, maybe.
And there was just, it was just in the zeitgeist.
Big kids talking.
There could have even been, like, you know, some buzz about it on the news. And I know some of that was a misdirection, right? But I was hook, line, and sinker. So I was thinking I was watching this video, literally, of people who weren't found, were missing. It really added to the atmosphere, I'll tell you.
It's probably hard to think back, but I wonder if there was an element of, like, big kids around you talking about it, like our cousins.
Maybe so. Maybe so. It could have been a school ground thing, right?
Yeah, exactly, right? Because if you're 10, then there would have been the grade 8s who are 14, and maybe they go to see it by themselves.
Who seemed like they were 20.
Oh my God, yeah.
They seemed like grown adults.
Yeah, because when I was in grade 3, you were in grade 8.
Oh, fair enough. Yeah, exactly. And I was always telling you about scary stuff.
Yeah. Boozing, driving your cars around, you know. I was like, whoa, what a big kid my brother is. We'll talk about it a little bit more at the end in terms of, like, the details of what exactly the production crew did in order to achieve this kind of virality. But it's, like, really remarkable and something that was just a product of its time, right?
Exactly.
You could just never do it like that again. It's kind of interesting to think about.
It is interesting. And I think, too, if you look at something even like what's going on with Baby Reindeer, Not sure if you've seen much about that.
Oh, yeah.
You and I loved that show. Mm-hmm. But since that show was released, there's been a big kind of public scene going on where people are trying to find out who people represented in the show are and all this stuff. Like, you cannot keep it contained.
No. And that took no time. And they found the real person.
Of course.
It took no time at all. Whereas, yeah, this was like a legitimate kind of air of mystery around it at the time that it came out.
Exactly. And I think they were ahead of the curve on some things that we'll mention, you know, at the end. Mm-hmm. But even to hear, oh, well, you know, a lot of it had to do with the internet and having some campaigns there. It's like, I'm sure that that was very innovative at the time.
Okay. So let me start us off with these student filmmakers here. So we have Heather and Josh and Mike. Heather right. and Josh seem to have already been friends, and I think that we know Mike through Josh because it's the first time that Heather gets to meet him, but he's obviously signed on to do this documentary that they're interested in making, although they're all interested in making it, but it seems that Heather is definitely the driving force.
Yeah. They spend one night in a hotel mm-hmm. or a motel, right? And they like shoot some whiskey and stuff together. They seem to be friendly at least, even though they don't know each other that well, maybe all of them.
Yeah, they go pick Mike up, they go out, and the first place that they're going to is a small town in Maryland called Burkittsville, which apparently used to be called Blair.
Mm-hmm.
And in this town, they're kind of like interviewing all these various townspeople about a myth or a legend that they're aware of about a Blair witch. And they're trying to talk to these townsfolk to see if they know anything about it. A couple of them do. A couple of them have some comments to make.
They all tell them totally different things.
Yeah. And some of it, I don't know. I don't think that it's excellent filmmaking or anything, because some of it also doesn't really seem to apply. Because I think they asked that one waitress, like, do you believe in magic? Do you believe in witches? And she's like, yeah, I do. And that's like all that they ask her about. There doesn't seem to be a very cohesive myth about the Blair Witch.
And I think that you had mentioned, too, that you don't necessarily find Heather to be the best interviewer.
No, she cuts people off.
She doesn't really let the interview breathe.
No. One character that gets spoken about during the interviews that they're doing is a person in the town called Mary Brown.
Mm-hmm.
So they go to see her, and she seems to be a bit of an eccentric, regarded that way by the town, maybe a bit of a pariah.
Yeah.
And so poor Mary Brown is just trying to describe this interaction she had with like a woman covered in horsehair in the woods. And Heather's like, what? Was she like this? Was she furry? She keep cutting her off.
And then they walk back to their car, the interviewers, and begin immediately disparaging her.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, basically they're like, well, she's nuts. They literally call her, in quotes, which I have written down, a lunatic.
Yeah, oh geez.
And I think that some of the things that must have happened off camera that they're using to come to the conclusion that she's maybe mentally ill is that she was making some very grandiose statements about the jobs and stuff that she's had.
Right.
And so that's what Heather notes as evidence.
I think also describing having the unexpected interaction with a strange woman covered in hair.
Yeah.
Probably didn't help her case.
But you know what? Like, people talk about getting abducted by aliens, right? Like, how weird is it, really?
Don't. Who?
People. I don't know.
Yeah. Would you? Okay. Any of your friends?
No.
And I think that I would dismiss a person who was telling me about their abduction encounter. I think
okay.
I would.
Okay. Would you dismiss someone who told you about a ghost? Because lots of my friends tell me about ghosts.
Oh, I have people telling me about ghosts too. I work in quite an old building, and people will say that they've seen or believe that there is a ghost in the building. I mean, that's right? True. You're right.
They tell you about that all the time.
That is so much more passive than saying, hey, did you
I got
hear last night
I alien?
Was abducted by an alien and brought back to Earth?
If my friend told me that they got anally probed by a ghost, I would probably.
Okay. You'd be like, well, maybe not, but.
I actually, like one of my very best friends who, you know, she works in a hospice. And so people are, you know, dying there all the time. And she was like, yeah, and this woman was looking behind me and she saw like a little girl, and she's talking about it, and she was like, and I was really spooked. And I'm quite the skeptic.
Same.
And I was like, okay, but this woman was dying. Like, her brain is not working right. She's like literally actively dying. So she's probably like hallucinating. And my friend was like, yeah, I guess.
And how old was she before she died? You know, you're in a hospice. It's like, okay, grandma, let's get you off to your deathbed type situation.
Yeah, they're in their deathbeds already. That's what hospice is for.
Which is sad, which is sad. But I think just ghosts is such a nebulous thing that people can be like, I walked into this room and I felt cold. The hair stood up on the back of my neck.
Or like a rocking chair rocked.
But I do not have a hard time with people believing in aliens. Absolutely not. Of course.
Oh, no. I believe in aliens in the, like, strictly intellectual sense. The universe is enormous. Why would I think that it's impossible?
That the truth is out there. Exactly.
Yes, exactly. And I've been abducted. That
was the icing on the cake.
That, yes. That was the thing that really clinched it for me. Yeah. Okay.
Now we're talking about aliens.
After this interaction with Mary Brown, I have an important point that I think we should kind of elucidate here. Heather is annoying. And I think I wrote that just because of the interruptions during the interview there.
Well, and what did you think about the rest of the interviews too? Because that's something I really liked.
I think it's fun.
I think that one of the things that I really liked, and upon rewatching this, because I think it had been some time. So then you're analyzing how they did things. And I thought that the interviews came off very much as candid interviews. They did not look polished. They did not sound polished. So they must have given these bit actors, here's the general idea we want you to get across. And that's it, right? Because there weren't scripted lines and it showed.
Yeah.
And I think even in one of the interviews, even a documentary probably wouldn't have used it. The baby was crying in this woman's arms, mm-hmm. slapping her face her mouth, again and again until she stopped it. And it wasn't the best interview, right? So it, to me, it really makes it feel authentic.
Yeah. So to me, when I'm watching a movie like this, where everything is super naturalistic, it's not scripted. To me, sometimes I'm like, is this just incredible acting or what? Because these just seem like normal people.
It's like meta.
Yeah, so I'm just like, this is perfect to me. I'm completely bought in. This is how people act. Because you and I have said to each other before, sometimes it's a problem for us when people are having a conversation in a piece of written fiction that has like a script that they're obviously sticking to. How annoying it is when someone says something that we feel you would never actually say in real life.
Yeah, or you'd never act that way.
This is not that.
One of the things that bugs me sometimes when I think about it that just separates the world of film so much from the real world is that people never mishear or don't hear each other. Nothing's ever repeated for the sake of, I just know I'm a person, I can't read lips that well, we're across the room or something, I'm the guy who has to ask you to say it like four times sometimes because I'm not getting it. And so maybe for me in particular, it takes me out of it.
Or they never just go like, oh yeah, when they didn't hear you.
Oh, that's crazy, man, wow.
So after they have their little interview session, they're pretty much, mm-hmm. that's all they're doing within the town of Blair, which is really, really tiny, like microscopic tiny is this town. It's more of a village.
Oh, yeah. You had said it's like below 300, right?
Yeah, I think it's got like 130 people living there now or something.
What about a hamlet? What is a hamlet?
Let me see. A hamlet is a form of local government for small communities. What? Hamlet versus village. What's the difference? In British terminology, a village is a small collection of houses with a church. Generally, okay, it isn't a clear-cut definition, though, as urban villages exist, as do villages with populations of more than 10,000. So, not clearly defined. A hamlet is the smallest recognized settlement in British geography. It could technically be a single house. But it is more commonly used to define a small rural hamlet settlement that lacks the specific characteristics of a village. Yep, so there you go.
That's pretty neat. Glad I asked.
So after they finish their interviews in Burkittsville, they go to the cemetery above Burkittsville, like on the hill above Burkittsville. She does a little straight to camera. This is where I feel like she's not acting in a naturalistic way, which is great because it's like, it's her performing.
She's trying to be news anchor-ish, right?
Exactly. And I feel like she's got like a bit of a transatlantic type accent going on. Like, I feel like her speaking becomes very like stilted. And,
a little more fancy.
Yeah. And then, so they do these things in the town proper. And then that's about all that they're doing there. They have their evening in a hotel where they do some drinking, which is not how I usually pregame my hikes, is with like a night of drinking straight liquor.
Especially that, exactly. You know me, the stuff I like's more often going to come in a shiny can or be pink or have an umbrella sticking out of it.
Nice mixed drink.
Not straight whiskey.
John has a fruity little drink because he can't shoot a whiskey.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, right. You told me about that yeah. Carrie Underwood lyric that you would have thought, oh, that sounds embarrassing when you heard it at the age of 8.
Yeah, at the age of 8, I was like, oh, my God, I'll never be that girl. Can't shoot a whiskey. How embarrassing.
Yeah, well, you've become the sum of all your fears.
Yeah, I drink fruity little drinks. They head out the next day, and they do one little bit of shooting at a place called Coffin Rock, which seems...
Oh, yes.
Seems to just be a little, like, outcropping of rock in a stream or a river. And then from there, the next destination that they want to hit is that there's apparently, like, a graveyard in the woods. And yes. And Heather is the guide. And she's taking them out and kind of seems to be taking them off trail. And so right from the get-go... You could tell that Josh and Mike are a little bit apprehensive and they kind of keep asking her and checking in, being like, you know where we're going? And she's very confident saying, yes, yep, I know where we're going. No problem. It's just around this hill, just there. And she's got the map and compass and she's doing all the navigating. Heather is overconfident and making very light of the fact that they're off trail hiking. That's something that you shouldn't be doing unless you're a real pro, in my opinion.
I agree. And they don't seem to be even close.
They're not pros whatsoever.
It seems like they're very much interested in filmmaking.
Yep.
And the hike is very much only a byproduct of that. They probably wouldn't have found themselves in the woods if not for their documentary.
Heather describes later that she does like to hike. But,
oh, okay. I might not have heard that.
But the other two don't. So then it's like, well, if you're only relying on one person's expertise, like I said, that's puts you in a tricky position.
All their eggs in the Heather basket.
So day one, Heather says, we're not lost. They feel a little lost.
Yeah.
They camp overnight. They hear lots of cracking and crashing through the bush around them. And Heather is very intrigued and wants to go check it out. And she tries to get Mike to come out of the tent. And he's like, no, I'm not going to do it.
Yeah.
She's very insistent that he go check. And he's very insistent that he won't. And he says it sounded like people.
Yes.
And like, that's a scary thing. Sounded like multiple people just around you in the night. That's terrifying.
And an interesting thing about this film, too, is there's also they build in there's a disparity between what the tech is picking up and what they're hearing at times, mm-hmm. too. Their tech is unreliable at times. So when I was hearing it for the first time, I thought, you know, I don't know if I would have been. Would you have been really freaked out by that first night, the cracking and such?
You know what? That's an interesting question because I have realized that sometimes it does not take a big critter to make a big crackling sound.
Especially when things are one thing, if people don't hike and camp, you have no idea how quiet and how dark mm-hmm. it is.
Yeah.
You're not close to a city center, you lose sight, I think, of the light pollution.
Yeah. Oh,
and how much of a difference it makes. So when you're out in these woods, it'll be the darkest thing you've ever seen, mm-hmm. and it is so quiet. So you're right, mm-hmm. if a raccoon moved, it's going to sound a little more intensive at night than you'd expect.
To be honest, John, you would probably, if you heard a raccoon move near your tent, you'd think it was a bear. Because sometimes you think you hear a squirrel, and you think, that's a lot of sound. You know, like sometimes it's a lot of crackling. Do you know what else? I went on a hike one time where it was just the season that acorns were falling, and deafening. It's crazy how loud it was. It was like crack, crack, crack all around you.
I'm not sure if you saw it, but there was something in the news recently out of the States that there was basically an escalated police encounter, which I believe involved someone being shot, that was brought on by...
I think he discharged his weapon, but I don't think anyone got shot.
Maybe no one got shot.
Oh, he thought he was shot. That's what it was.
So the thing is that acorns were falling on a nearby car, and he was probably really on pins and needles because he was in an encounter, mm-hmm. and he thought it was a gunshot. So, yeah, it makes perfect sense.
Mm-hmm. When I was walking, it was crazy how loud it was. And, I mean, they are falling from a great height, so you kind of get it, but
and
it was
hard.
Just like... crackle, crackle, crackle all around you the whole time.
I have experienced that. So I do a little light camping in a park, you know, and my family loves it.
That's camping. You're in a tent.
Yeah, but we're surrounded by people.
Yeah.
But
it's a campground,
You know, at night, though, the acorns really were making a ruckus all night. It was interesting.
And like you say, it's when you're in that quiet stillness that every little thing sounds loud.
Yeah, when we would take the kids, like we'd wake them up at midnight and take them out to the beach by where this park is and like lay on the sand and like the way that the night sky looks even is totally different, right? It's very interesting.
Anyway, yes, as you say, the tech maybe like what we're hearing on the video is maybe not proportionate to what we're seeing from our actors in terms of reaction.
Right, because they're seeing it differently or hearing it differently is supposed to be. So they're like, oh, I hear a kid laughing. And like, right. We might not hear it. And so we're like, what's going on with them? Why are they saying I hear a kid laughing and we don't? So I think they're also supposed to be like, why isn't it on the tape or why wasn't it picked up?
Or maybe it makes you strain and be like, oh, maybe I just didn't quite hear it. Because that's what I felt more often was like, ooh, did I miss something that they saw or heard?
Yeah, because sometimes they'll just be like, did you hear that? It sounded just like this. And I'm like, what did?
Then the next day, they get a little bit more distressed.
Mm-hmm.
I wrote here, Heather's way overconfident. At least she's using a compass with the map. Because at first, I was like, does she even have a compass?
And then they're just using the map.
Yeah, and then they reference it at some point. She does have a compass.
Because unless you have landmarks, the map is only so useful, right? Because you need to be able to orient yourself.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So, of course, you need the compass. That makes sense.
And then Mike is yelling. He's dysregulated. He says, get us home. Just get us home.
Yes.
So I completely agree with that sentiment. I completely get it. I have been turned around in the bush before where I'm just thinking like, please, where's my car? Just take me to the parking lot.
I think too, it makes perfect sense that the more uneasy he gets, the less rational he acts. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah.
So
he's just
thinking emotionally and he's like, yeah, I don't care. Just get us home. Mm-hmm. That's not going to help anything. He knows that at a cognitive level. But that's all he can think,
mm-hmm.
right? So I think that's well played.
Do you want to speak to emotional mind versus logical mind versus wise mind at all?
Yeah, sure. So that's a concept. I'm trying to think of where I'm used to hearing it from. That's a DBT concept. DBT being dialectical behavioral therapy.
Which is an offshoot of cognitive behavioral therapy.
Offshoot of cognitive behavioral therapy, which has been like the gold standard for counseling since like the 60s. Forever. It's very well researched. DBT, I believe, was kind of created to try to help some particularly difficult to treat conditions and personality disorders being one of them, especially borderline personality disorder. And so basically the concept of emotional mind, rational mind, and wise mind being there's a way to think that's so cognitive, and that would be the rational mind. So for example, think about you and I, if we were a married couple and you came home and you were telling me about your boss, right? And how frustrated you were with a certain situation. And I'm like, well, there's a simple solution. Just do this. You should just do this. This is how to fix it. I can see what might be a really good solution to that problem, but I'm not taking into account the emotional heart of the problem, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then emotional thinking, emotional mind basically is driven too much by emotion where you're not thinking in an effective way.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so, you know, we just reference Mike. Wise mind is basically when you're in a good place where you're able to combine the two.
Yeah. And so that's the way that I describe it to patients as well. The goal being that you can spend as much time as possible within the state of wise mind.
Yeah.
Where you're able to think logically and then also stay true to, you know, where your emotions are pointing
yes,
you as well.
And other people's too.
Because what we see as a problem with people with personality disorders, as well as people without, is that when you're in your emotional mind, you are so much less able to make logical and rational decisions. And
yeah.
We all know that, right?
Everyone can relate.
Every single person on earth from the time that they're a baby to now, every single person knows what that's like, right? If you are pissed off and then you stub your toe, you scream at the chair you stubbed your toe on. Does that make any kind of rational sense? No.
If I catch my pocket or my belt loop on a cabinet pole and I'm like, no!
And you're like, ooh, you're trying to get fucked up.
Yeah, do you want to get beat up, you stupid cabinet?
Yeah. And so we can all relate to that.
Yeah.
The goal is to try to spend less time, particularly in that emotional mind where you make rash decisions and where you're really dysregulated.
And you can't be in it all the time, but there are things you can do to make it more likely you'll be thinking that way, right? When a lot of it comes down to body calm.
Yeah. I feel that what we're looking at here with Mike, you know, logically, does he know that the best way to communicate is not to scream at the person with the map? Of course he knows that. But he's too emotionally dysregulated. He's too emotionally heightened right now. He's not thinking in that way.
Yeah.
And so he's just reacting. And so this kind of like emotional dysregulation is something that anyone who works with people sees all the time. Even people who work like retail, right? You see people if when you're working in a public facing job, a people facing job, you're going to see reactions like this.
Yeah, exactly. And it's difficult because they can lose sight of the rational side of things, right? Mm-hmm. So like you said, the retail example, okay, you know, I'm not able to take this return because it's outside of the time frame of our return policy, right? And the person's upset to be hearing that and they're kind of escalated. Yelling at that person is not going to change things, right? They're not the person who made the policy. They're not the person who can change the policy. And in that person's mind, they would know that, but they're too frustrated to really have any good sense at that time. Another example, too, of emotional reasoning that we probably deal with frequently would be using your emotions as evidence of something. So I'm mad.
Yes. So you therefore, you did something wrong to me. Oh, right? Yeah. Anyone in a relationship, I think that you,
yes.
Like a romantic relationship over any period of time, you know what that's like.
Right.
I have to do that to myself for sure sometimes because,
yeah.
You know, for example, my husband's out, you know, playing baseball, which is something that he should be doing. And that's a great thing. But I'm home trying to put the baby to bed and the baby's not going to bed well.
Yeah. And where the fuck were you?
Yeah, exactly. So then I have to think to myself, I'm like, well, or what? Are you the type of person who doesn't want your husband to have fun?
Exactly.
Obviously not. And so you just need to cool it.
And the two aren't related.
And the two aren't related.
Your kid's not going to
bed.
He's
not doing something
to you.
He's
not doing that because dad's at baseball, right? It's just yeah. Happens to fall
on that
day.
He's like,
you know
what? If dad's at ball, I'm staying up all night.
See how you like this, mom?
Yeah, sometimes that's the way it feels. Emotional mind. The next night, they find little rock cairns, little stacks of rocks around their tent.
You know, almost reminded me of like an Inukshuk. Something like that.
Yep. And a Inukshuk is a Canadian term for those little stacks of rocks that look like people.
Little rock guys.
Yep. Yep.
And you do see them in our area.
Oh, people yeah.
People put them by the side of the highway. Or,
yeah.
You know, some witch will make them.
Yeah, just witches, you know. And then the next day, more arguing. Now the map is missing.
Yeah, this was a really interesting little arc.
Yeah, Heather is looking in her pockets, filmed by Josh and berated by Josh.
And Mike.
And Mike. A little less so by Mike at this point.
Yeah,
but,
for sure.
But she's saying it's not in my pocket. And he's like, well, I didn't reach in your pants and take it. She says, well, that's the only place I keep it is in my pocket. So if it's not there, one of you must have it.
I don't have it. We have to go. I'm serious. I don't have it.
Are you fucking serious?
I'm fucking serious. I don't have the map. Okay.
Heather, that is so not cool, man.
I know it's not cool.
That is so not cool.
I know it's not cool.
That's the fucking, like, least responsible thing you could have possibly done, man.
And they're arguing over, like, well, you checked it yesterday. You never gave it back. Yes, I did give it back after I checked you. And for me, I'd be in utter panic mode. If I'm in the middle of the bush and I've lost my only way to navigate, I'd be freaking the fuck out right now.
How much would you be suffering from the social liability of them saying, clearly you lost this, even though you didn't think you did?
I'd be suffering badly.
Me too.
I would have a conniption.
Especially me because, and I'm saying not just for the sake that, yeah, your map's gone. That's the worst part. But
that is my fault.
For me, you know how absent-minded I can be.
Yes, very much so.
If someone told me I lost something, I'd feel relatively confident they were right.
Yeah, John is a leave your wallet and keys on the table and leave a restaurant kind of guy.
Yes, but the good thing is I can't go far without the keys.
That's true. So that reminds you where your wallet is. Yeah. See, I feel like I'm not as bad about losing things as you are.
You're clearly not.
No, you're notorious. You're a notorious loser.
But I think a distinction that I make that drives my wife crazy is something's misplaced, but it's not lost. So I might not have seen my wallet for 2 days. I'm confident it's in a safe place.
It's in the house.
You know what I mean? I might have put it in my glove box where I usually don't. I might have had it in a bag, which is in my trunk. I might have it in a pair of pants that are somewhere in the house. But I know that like someone's not out there spending our money with my wallet. You know?
Right.
So, yeah, of course, it drives other people crazy. They're like, well, where the hell is it then? And I'm like, I don't know. That's the whole point. But I'm not worried yet because it'll turn up.
Yep.
So they were missing the map and Heather was being accused of having lost it.
And she says, did you take it? And Josh says, I'm not playing head games. You are. They're arguing with each other over who's, you know, fucking over who, basically.
Yeah. And they're certainly beginning to turn on each other.
Oh, big time. And Heather bearing the brunt of it.
She's being scapegoated big time.
Yeah, she's being ganged up on.
And you had a good point, right? It'd be like if I expected someone in my circle, probably my wife, to plan out everything,
mm-hmm.
right? You know, every event, everything.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm like, well, great. You know, oh, we've got this event. Didn't turn out so well. But
yep.
I put all the responsibility to plan it out on her. And that's the position Heather's in.
Yep.
You know, like you said, she's responsible for getting them in, getting them to where they want to go mm-hmm. and getting them out.
They're just
and
so
when it
ride.
Goes to hell, they're like, well, thanks a lot, Heather.
That's like two parents showing up somewhere. They realize they forgot the diaper bag and they say, well, mom forgot the diaper bag.
Yeah, I'm sorry, buddy, but your mom yeah. forgot the diaper bag.
Why am I the one who forgot it?
We both
could have brought it. I have here, from the moment the map is gone, they are so fucked. I have that written. You are so fucked.
That's why I think I said earlier that the movie's bisected into two halves.
But when they before have the map and after when they the map. Don't.
Because it's also just a catalyst for them turning in terms of how they're acting, how they're behaving towards each other.
Mm-hmm.
That's when everything gets amped up.
Yep. And then we've got some platitudes from Heather, which are just not true and not helpful, in my opinion. It's hard to get lost and even harder to stay lost.
Ooh, I'm not so sure.
Heather is so wrong. She's talking about we've destroyed so much of our natural environment in the United States. That's what she says. It's hard to get lost and even harder to stay lost. And I was telling John, because I was trying to look up a statistic to try to help me illustrate.
That may or may not exist.
That may or may not exist. I was just trying to illustrate this point that it doesn't really take that much acreage, that much space to get lost in. You know, for example, you could be lost in 5 square miles or something. And of course, it's not far to walk 5 miles, but you don't know that you're walking in a straight line.
Yeah.
You don't know if you, because, you know, you might need to be going around obstacles, whatever. You could be going in circles. You get disoriented. Even though, yes, of course, we've lost a lot of our, natural environments
yeah.
as the human population has boomed as it has. But that said, there is still plenty of space to get lost, go missing.
There's a lot of green
and never
space,
turn up.
For sure. And you had mentioned you did look up this area, and there's way more than enough wooded area in which to get lost.
Yes. So they filmed this movie in Gatland State Park,
mm-hmm.
which is 140 acres.
Yeah, that'll do it.
Yeah. Yeah, you can get lost in that easy.
And not to mention, even when you're talking about, say, five miles, right?
Yeah.
They're not city miles, so walking 5 miles is not easy
no,
when you're
God,
not
no.
on a trail.
So I looked around Burkittsville. I was looking at a map, and so Gatland State Park is to kind of the east, and that's where they happen to film this movie.
Mm-hmm.
But there's lots of wooded area around it, and I tried to look at the biggest space that there was where there was no roads, no nothing.
Right.
And this is a poor estimate because this is me eyeballing based on the legend of how many kilometers it should have been, how many kilometers like each inch was. But there is enough wooded area around there. There are thousands of acres. So to the west of Burkittsville, the area that I was looking at, to my eye looked to be approximately 24 square kilometers, about that. Guess how many acres that is, 24 square kilometers?
I don't know.
5,930 acres.
Jeez, I wouldn't have been even, I would have guessed in the hundreds.
Right? Like, so what I'm
she's
saying
wrong.
Is, she's wrong. There's
and it's
plenty
not
of
hard
space
to get
lost.
And
no,
it's
not
hard,
hard
to
get lost.
To stay lost.
No.
Sorry to say.
Because the thing is, you get tired, you get confused, you get disoriented, you get weak. Like, so every day that you're lost is a day that you're not as capable of getting out as you were the first day, you know?
And I'm not sure if this is the case always, but something that I have been told or heard said in our local area is if you get lost, stay put. Right.
Yeah.
So you're more easy to find if you're able to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously not where their heads are at this point. A,
no,
they're still
they
kind of trying
to
get
out.
Where they're going. Have they given up on going to the graveyard by now?
Yeah, they couldn't find it. They're just trying to get to the car.
And is this where Mike is saying like it's starting to become a little more intense for them? He's like, I'm supposed to be at work tomorrow.
Yeah, I'm supposed to be working.
We were not
tomorrow.
Supposed to be here this
they're
long.
They're supposed to return the equipment because they rented it, which there's something sweet about that. Like, I got to get it back to the store.
Yeah,
like,
I'm going to have to pay another $20.
Yeah. She says it's hard to stay lost. She's wrong.
That's
but
just not right.
But Josh
Sorry,
says that people will be looking for them. And that's true. And that's a good tip that is actually helpful because he says, when I don't show up tomorrow, my girlfriend's going to know I got, like, I'm lost, and she's going to sound the alarm, basically. So that is something important when you are hiking, is to tell people where you're going and when you're expected to come back. So you've never done any backcountry camping. You've done campground camping. But when you go backcountry camping, because you basically go into the park office and you say where what trail you're intending to go, because you have to get a park pass. And so you say where you're intending to go.
When you plan to come out.
When you plan to come out.
Hmm.
And like you leave contact information for people and you give your license plate.
It's pretty smart.
Yeah. So if Jenna doesn't show up, we can let these people know they were in this car. They said they were going to be at this campsite, right? So it's a place that they can start when they have to go look for you if they do have to do that.
Okay, here's the question. Do you think that our spouses would notice we were missing first or our mom?
I don't know. Depends on the day.
I think mom would be, if mom knew we were on a backcountry backpacking trip, I think she would be so anxious that as soon as we were late by 10 minutes, half an hour, she would be calling our spouses being like, have you heard from them? Have they checked in yet?
I was going to say, if it's a weekend, my husband. If it's a weekday, my mom.
Right.
Yeah. Because my mom's texting me throughout the day. My husband's not.
No, well, he's working.
He's working. My mom's working too, but she's just.
Her job is very different.
A little
from
bit
his.
Different.
Yeah.
Okay. What do I have here? The fact that Heather is so insufferable makes it make more sense that she keeps filming everything.
Yeah, because I agree. They really did have
she's
to.
She's a pest.
They had to come up with a reason that she kept filming.
And it's
that,
because
that
she's just a
diehard.
That was the
crux of the movie.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
So
because
it does
if they
make
can't
sense.
Make that happen, they can't make the movie work because why did they keep filming? And then at one point, too, they do a good job of justifying it that she's almost anchored by it. She feels
she says,
more comfortable continuing with it. Because she's still making her documentary and she does tell them it's all I have right now.
So then I have here kind of a pivotal moment. Mike starts laughing. He says, I kicked the map into the creek. It was useless. And I have written here, that is so fucked up. Heather's reaction is completely justified because she starts absolutely
screaming
at him.
Does she kind of smack him?
And then this is where I also noted there are a few moments in this where they come to blows, and this is one of them. And then the camera cuts out.
Yeah, not that it's justified, but it's certainly understandable.
Not justified to hit a person ever, to aggress a person.
But everybody gets that. But it's like, it's understandable.
But right? Like her reaction of freaking the fuck out. Because this is where I have, and then I have, I think, written, they come to blows, but all seems okay afterwards. A bunch of witchy stuff hanging in the trees. This is where they come upon all the like little bundles of branches
the
in
classic.
Different shapes. All hanging from the trees.
I want to talk about Mike's reaction a bit first because he was having what we would probably call an incongruent reaction or affect to what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And so that can be a very uneasy thing to experience.
So
but basically, the way you would expect someone to act in that situation, he's not. He's like giggling, laughing.
He's dying laughing, saying, I kicked the map into the creek. It was useless.
Yeah, and probably because he's so like, what the fuck? About it that you can laugh, but also even if he thought the map was useless, he could have still held on to it. And every time they looked
Heather
at it, he's like, "Who gives a fuck what the map says? I don't care."
And I like it here too of Heather because then Heather also says, "Like you didn't know what it meant, but I did."
Yeah,
like
because which they probably don't believe, but
no, but imagine how pissed you'd be. It's like just because you don't know how to read a map doesn't mean that. Doesn't mean that I don't.
Not to mention, they're so ready to be at each other's throats.
Oh yeah,
that
they're
just
tired.
Giving someone a reason to be mad at you at that point, it's gonna blow over.
And
right?
That's blow up. That's a hell
of
a
blow over was the wrong thing because that implies
the opposite. It's all gonna blow over.
It's gonna blow up. Yeah, don't worry, Mike. It'll blow over.
So then there's all the witchy stuff hanging in the trees.
Yeah,
Heather
is there a word
filming,
for those?
Filming. Not that I'm aware of.
Yeah, but they're a very cool image. I thought they were so cool. I'm not surprised.
Kind of iconic.
And yeah, they are because other than the visual of Heather's snotty nose and her lit up eyes.
That's the best.
I would say the sticks is the thing that I think about when I think of the Blair Witch.
Yep, I think me too. Okay, and then I have written here, Mike seems like a loose cannon.
Mike is a loose cannon, but it's probably because I think one thing about it, the group is degrading. They're starting to lose their resolve, and it's coming out in different ways. Mm-hmm. Mike doesn't even he doesn't know Heather.
No,
you
he
know?
Doesn't.
So you'd think like you'd be even slower to get to a confrontational or kind of the point he's at with her, but he's just lost it, you know? And I don't mean he's lost his sanity, but I do mean he's lost his hold
he's
on
lost
maintaining
his composure.
Yeah, exactly.
And then we get points of Heather talking kind of to the camera. She says, "We're lost and I don't know what to do." She's acknowledging it. That night, they decide to not have a fire and to turn off the camera light because they think that when they did have a fire, the witchy stuff happened. When they didn't have a fire, no witchy stuff happened. So they think that maybe that'll help. And so that night, shaking of the tent.
And we could see it, right?
I would be like, oh my God, there's someone right there.
That would be awful. Exactly.
And then they leave the tent. They're running. And this is where we hear Heather go, "What the fuck is that?" And we don't know what she's referring to.
Yeah, they're just running. And she's like, "What the fuck is that? What the fuck is that?" Any other movie they would show you.
Yeah.
And I think like, yeah, that's awesome.
And it's like, what is it? What is it? I don't know. But we know there was something right at their tent. So that's terrifying. That's terrifying.
Because where do they run to?
You don't really know. They just kind of like run through the bush and then it's the next day. So the next day we see that Josh's shit has been thrown around. His stuff has been messed with. They come to blows again. They're yelling, they're fighting. And then a little while later, we see a really close up of Mike. He's talking to Heather and saying like, "Just don't bother Josh right now. Just let him do it."
Yes.
And she's like, "No, we need to get going." And he's like, he's crying. Just let him cry.
Yes.
Which is, very emotionally, that there's a little emotional maturity from Mike.
And I was just thinking, so I think Mike is in a little more wise mind there. Mm-hmm. And Heather is thinking more from the rational.
Yep.
Right? Nope. Got to keep moving. Got to get out of here. Mike has the sense to acknowledge the fact, I don't think it's a good time for Josh. Maybe we could give him a few minutes.
Let's give him some grace.
And he's also thinking rationally because we've been walking. What the fuck has it done?
What difference does it make?
Like what's 5 minutes of grace for Josh going to hurt?
This is something that we've spoken about as well, which is the fact that this agitation, emotional dysregulation at a high level, it spends itself at a certain point and then you come back down to calm. And that's what we're seeing. Like, obviously, we've seen some really extreme reactions from Mike. And here we see that that just can't be sustained. And he's calm at this point. It fluctuates.
And there's something to be said. And so, like, almost if you looked at internalizing Mike and Josh, there's something to be said for emotions that are difficult. Mm-hmm. For if you're trying to manage yourself, even on a day-to-day, that giving space for difficult emotions can actually be a good thing. Mm-hmm. So not stuffing them, not avoiding them all the time, but putting limits on them. So one example would be when we're working with people who are anxious, we're saying, we're going to take 10 minutes to worry about this thing, and then we're going to move on and do something different, right? Because, sometimes it feels like when you're nervous about something or something feels like a problem that's nagging at you, you want to spend time thinking about it, and your body is almost driven to do that. And so I think there are times where it can be really effective to just like sit there and stew in a really hard emotion and then have a limit on it and move on with something different. And I think that's what Mike's trying to give to Josh, and it really can help.
Yeah. He's giving him some space, which is also like just generous and thoughtful of him.
And it could have led to an altercation. Mm-hmm. If Heather got up in his face at that point. Yeah. It really could have led to an unhelpful altercation for
Mike's
sure.
Mike's in a very, helpful position in this situation.
Yeah, great, now.
Here. Yeah, Josh is crying. His stuff got messed with. Jelly stuff all over my shit. So there's some kind of
goo.
And we don't see plasma. It. We don't really know what it is. And then
ectoplasm,
we have,
I should have said, not plasma. Plasma could be bad.
Ectoplasm. And then we have, again, Heather. It's not possible to get lost so deep in the forest in this country.
Yeah, she seems to think that every forest is being cut down to be turned into furniture. In this country, are you kidding me? Do you know how big the United States is?
Yeah.
Do you know how many green spaces there are that go on for miles in the United States? You know what I mean? And I'm not even an expert, but I know that there are some very country-like areas within the United States.
Ever been in a plane? Ever look down?
That is such a silly assertion.
And I mean, like, on the one hand, it's true because there's not many places that are truly wild. For example, that there might be roads in remote places and stuff like that. But plenty to get lost in doesn't mean that everywhere is like residential.
They're not
like a
uncontacted.
Kmart. Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
But it's few and far between to get to like an outpost or someone's house if they live remotely even. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And I could go out to where our folks have a camp, I could get lost.
Oh, you could get
there are woods everywhere.
and farms and towns, and you could get good and lost.
And yet still, I could get lost.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You could get dead lost easy.
So sorry, Heather, that's just not true. Maybe she's overconfident. Maybe she was overconfident when she started this. She clearly was when she started the expedition in the first place. But one question I want to ask you, are we attributing their hopeless lostness to a true inability to navigate, or is it a witchy thing? You know, that they do keep coming back and seeing the same stone or the same place. Did you take that as a supernatural element of the movie as well? So, I kind of did.
Good question. Because up until now, I may have said they're just straight up lost. But pretty much now, after this situation, they have made the decision to walk south all day. They've chosen one direction because all they have now is the compass. And I think that all said and done, that's a pretty good thing.
Very good idea. It'd be like being in a maze and keeping your left hand against the outside wall and eventually,
It's just a way to say, we're making progress in the right direction. We're not looping back on ourselves. And then they realize that they are in the same place. So this, it sounds like that could be witchy.
Okay.
And here we have, I have written down, it's not the same log. Cry, cry, cry. I'd cry too. Scary lost. That's what I have written down. When I told you that it was a bit stream of consciousness.
Yeah. Your notes are, again, like a tone poem.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Snaps.
In a smoky lounge.
And then we've got Josh harassing Heather. You took one of the witch's trinkets. So she took one of the hanging things, which I had not realized that she did until he said it.
Yes. That was a reminder for me too.
He's being so nasty where he's like, here's your motivation. We're lost in the bush. We don't know where to go. We've been chased by a witch, and saying all these things to her. And she's just crying. And I find this line a little hokey, but where she says, it's all I have left, okay, about making the documentary. I don't like this line.
Well, I don't know. Again, I'm sure that one of the things the filmmakers were most worried about was, how do we make them keep filming? How do we justify that? These days, and I think you said this when we watched it together, they would be like wearing a motion-activated GoPro on their hat.
Mm-hmm.
And they would basically having like a cop-style body cam that just films. That would be so much easier to do than to say, why are you still lugging that 25-pound thing on your shoulder?
It's like they have like a camcorder and then they've got a big one.
Yeah, and it's got like the viewfinder like that you're looking through and everything. So I see what you mean. It's all I have. That's a little bit hyperbolic, really. But I think I know where it's coming from.
And then following this, for once, we have a quiet night in the tent. But in the morning, Josh is gone.
Yeah, so that's kind of interesting, right? It's not that it's a bait and switch, but it's kind of like a yin-yang where it's so much more jarring that he was missing on the one night that they had, that they were undisturbed, unmolested.
Lulled into a false sense of security type of thing. Yes. And this is so, so terrifying. As much as this movie doesn't have much plot.
It doesn't.
Great, great plot point. He's just fucking gone. One of your three people is gone and you don't know why. And it's Josh who's the one who's friends with them both and who's
their through line.
I don't know. This is a real turning point.
And it doesn't have much of a plot, but I don't mean to say that as a criticism.
No, me either.
I'm fully invested when I'm watching this movie.
Yeah.
And I'm not losing track of anything. I'm not bored. It carries me through in a really effective way. It's just if I were to write the plot down, I could probably do it in half a page.
Oh my God. Yeah. It's just not what this movie is driven by. And that's okay.
Yeah. It's not like a Chris Nolan joint.
Yeah. Because there's movies that are all about plot.
Yeah.
There's movies that are all about character, movies that are all about spectacle, and that's fine. And they each have value.
And we'll talk about that more too. But there's so much to this movie in terms of what's missing. And it makes it really unique and interesting.
Yeah, I don't knock it at all. Okay, so Josh is gone. They scream for him. Scream, scream, scream his name. Yeah. Nothing. Nothing back at all. The next night, Heather and Mike hear Josh screaming. They can't find him. He doesn't respond to them when they try to call out to them. Does that make you think that it's a witch, like almost like imitating his voice or that kind of thing?
Yeah, it almost reminds me
like the bear in Annihilation.
I was literally going to say.
Yeah, I know you were going to say that.
It's so funny because they're not that closely related, but it does remind me of the freaky bear.
Is it just me or is the bear from fucking Annihilation one of the best horror images of the last decade?
I think it's really stuck with people. I've seen it on a lot of lists and stuff. And it's so well good. Earned. Extremely justified. Good. I agree.
In the morning, okay, there's a little witchy stick bundle. And Heather picks it up because it's right in front of the tent. She picks it up to go throw it away, move it away from the tent.
Yeah.
She does, and then she investigates it a little bit. Within it, it's wrapped up with his clothing.
Yeah.
It's wrapped up with strips of his clothing. And within it is a little, like, bloody pouch that has teeth and hair in it.
I always try to look to see what it
is. To look closer,
but... It looks like teeth to me, but they look kind of big. You know, like, I didn't know if it was meant to be bone or...
I think it's a tooth or it's
like when you pull out adult teeth,
yeah.
They're long. They're like from a wolf.
We have that little disgusting discovery.
It was disgusting.
And then we have the famous shot of Heather and her snotty nose and she's crying, which, yeah, iconic, perfect,
yes.
Great, evocative. I love it. I found it poignant that she says, I want to apologize to Mike's mom and Josh's mom my mom. She said, I insisted that we come out.
Yeah, a lot of humility there.
Yeah, and I don't know. You know me and parent stuff. I just think that that's really touching.
No kidding.
That she wants to make that apology. And then she says, and this is one of the only lines that seems like it was maybe written down. I'm scared to close my eyes. I'm scared to open them.
Yes.
And then she says, I'm going to die out here.
That actually is pretty poetic.
Right? And then we hear Josh again at night. They leave the tent to seek him out. They come upon the house in the bush, which I think was supposed to be the one described as the one where the murders happened. Spooky house, mostly just abandoned. Like, they didn't do too much set dressing, it doesn't look to me.
Except for the bloody handprints.
So they're kind of exploring the house. Mike and Heather are close but separate.
Right.
And then they hear Josh. Mike says he's downstairs. And so Mike starts running down in pursuit of Josh. And Heather's like, no, wait, Mike. Like, she wants to stay close to him. But he gets kind of ahead of her. So she's following him down the stairs. And then here we are at like the climax, which is Mike standing motionless, looking into the corner of the house in the basement.
That was really scary to me when I saw it for the first time. And it's still really creepy to see.
It is creepy.
Yeah, I agree. Just him stood motionless looking in the corner.
Yeah. So this is reminding us of the urban legend of the murderer who made kids stand in the corner while he killed another kid.
Yeah.
And then Heather is screaming, Mike, Mike, which I also think is iconic. That image of him pointing and her saying, Mike, is for some reason just so burned into my brain, both aspects of it. And then there's some kind of a bang. Heather goes down, can't really see what the camera's looking at. Cut to black. It's over.
Yeah, like what an ending.
This movie does so much with so little because, to be honest, I don't have any complaints about it at all. It's scary. It's unsettling the whole way through. I don't even care that there's, I think that there's some criticism of like, well, the ending's maybe a little bit lackluster or that kind of thing. It's scary to me.
If you're going to say that, the whole thing is lackluster to you because this movie has next to nothing in it. And you have to recognize that that's what makes it truly brilliant, right? Because it does so much with the negative space, whereas other movies would have filled that negative space with maybe something that might have then seemed over the top.
Yeah. I love that you don't see a witch.
Yep.
I don't know. I love that you don't really know what's happening, but you know something's going on.
Yeah, I think it's really amazing. And even like them saying, what the fuck is that? And they don't even try to show it with
the
camera.
They don't show a thing or hear
a
thing.
It's so interesting.
It's a tight 90 minutes.
Yeah, we love that.
I friggin' love that so much.
It allowed us, we actually were able to fit in two horror movies on this night.
Yes, we did. This was the second one.
Yeah.
Like I said, I've been showing my hand right from the beginning.
Yeah.
I love this movie. I think it's super scary, super unsettling, super effective. Big bang for your buck. I enjoy watching it. I would recommend it. Any kind of criticisms leveled against it, I kind of just brush off because I think, no, it works for me. Gets the job done for me.
I think also you shouldn't accept too many criticisms of it as well because it was a complete pioneer.
Yeah.
That's one thing.
It wasn't
like
the first
found
footage.
To look back on it now, sure, I don't think it was the first found footage. But it was the one that brought the genre to light and certainly spurred 1,000 imitators.
And I was going to say, but it defined it.
It did.
Yeah.
And I think so then to criticize it, not that it can't be criticized because of course it can, but you need to understand the context in which it was made, where it was a very unique idea and way to do this movie.
Can I tell you a little bit about the...
I really want to hear about it. Yes.
I want to tell you about the finer points of the viral marketing campaign because it's a little trip back in the time machine here.
What the realities were.
Yeah, and to a young internet that was good at spreading this viral story, but not so good at disseminating what's true and what's not. Yeah. So it was the perfect storm to create so much buzz around this movie that could never be replicated now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, had never been done before and could never be done in the time since. So I just think it's like a magic little moment in history where on IMDb, the actors were listed as missing, presumed dead.
Isn't that amazing?
On IMDb. Isn't that great?
I can't even believe IMDb was a thing in 1999.
Yeah, but I mean, you could tell when you go on there, it's an old layout. Like, you know, it doesn't look like a fancy...
It could be a little more user-friendly at times.
Yeah. They had missing posters. They had fake news articles.
Yes.
And lots of word of mouth then directed people towards like a website that had been created for the movie.
Yeah.
The Sci-Fi Channel released a mockumentary called The Curse of the Blair Witch. To add credence to the fake urban legend that they had invented. And so all of this kind of combined into the perfect storm to make it a huge buzzworthy movie that, like you said, at the time, you basically felt like you couldn't get away from culturally. Mm. And so I want to tell you how much it cost to produce and how much it grossed. $60,000 to produce. Grossed $248 million.
Isn't that's got to be like some kind of next to a
record.
Isn't
that great?
Yeah, that's amazing. It makes me sad a little bit. I hope that
that they got paid enough.
I hope that the actors had some royalty rights, you know, because $248 million is a fat chunk, especially in 1999, right? But $60,000 for all the cast and crew and all the production, that sounds pretty scant.
Yeah, yeah, probably would be. Although I don't think it was probably a very big team.
No, I would have confidence that they were not a bloated production team, right?
Yeah.
And I think it speaks to the genre, too. We had a guest, Mike Munzer, come on, and he pointed out to us during our episode with him that, you know, horror, for all the critique it might get from outsiders...
Oh, yeah, it puts butts in seats.
It's a lucrative genre, right? They're always reliable to get people out to try to get scared. Mm-hmm. And so if you're able to make it on a really lean budget, you can have a really great return of investment.
And I feel that as we're talking about this movie, Paranormal Activity is also ringing in my ears, right?
I would love to see its box office figures too, because I bet they're similar. Not that they would probably be exactly.
I want to say that they maybe spent even less making it.
Oh, well, that would be amazing.
They spent hardly anything making it.
Wow.
The guy who wrote it did it in his house and hired two actors, and like, that's it.
So that's amazing. And I had heard too about the marketing that when they had brought it to like Sundance Film Festival, that they had been handing out pamphlets asking for information about the missing people.
Yeah.
Like, it's just like...
That's great.
It's twisted. It's really twisted, right? And I'm a 10-year-old going to this thing being like, holy shit.
They're really missing.
But I think, so just to get into it a bit, I thought this movie is amazing. Mm-hmm. It's of its time, but not in a way that makes it negative. It's like going back and watching a true crime documentary about murder from the 70s. Or something. Yeah. It's still super interesting.
It's just kind of like a generation defining.
It is. And I think that having them behind the camera all the time helps us to imagine it more. Because we don't see anything that's not from the direct perspective of the characters.
Mm-hmm.
So in another movie, you might see another scene where it shows the monster moving somewhere else that the characters aren't.
Yeah.
Or anything
like
that.
A little dramatic irony.
Exactly. Yeah, dramatic irony. Exactly. And B... I think that it speaks to something that is really related to mental health, which is that the way the human brain works, something about our psyche, is that the unknown can be so much scarier than the known, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's like a devil that you do know is better than the devil you don't. They're both bad, but one's unknown. And so I think that's what this movie is about. They leave everything as a blank space. And obviously, you know, it's kind of cliche, but your mind can almost fill it in. And my mind doesn't. I'm not like, oh, I think this is happening and this is happening. But the sense of not knowing is the really creepy part.
Mm-hmm. I think no matter how many times I watch it, I'll try to find more or perceive more. Like, oh, did I see a hand shaking the tent? Did I see, you know what I mean? I think I'll be searching for more and more every time.
Same as I said about when they undo the flesh bundle. And like, what exactly
you're gonna
is in it?
Look a little bit closer at the bits and bobs. I think it's great. And I definitely, like I said before, I definitely thought that the first time that I watched it, that it would be, you know, something fun to do, but I wouldn't be scared. Yeah. That's what I thought going into it. I will not be scared by this. And I was.
Took you by surprise.
Yep.
Yeah. That's interesting, eh? So I want to ask you, this movie is not rife with mental health topics for us to tease out. I think we had some interesting discussions about what did come up, but I wanted to ask you, let's say one of these people survived, mm-hmm. right? They presented to you at the hospital or mm-hmm. to the hospital, and obviously they're going to your unit probably because they'd probably be super agitated. They would be not making a ton of sense. I'm just speculating mm-hmm. here about these characters that we saw. What would do you think would be the biggest priorities for you and the people on your unit if you had someone who had been through this experience come in? Like, where do you think they would start? Where do you think you would start?
Well, so I guess it would depend on how they came down to us. So mm-hmm. if someone presents on my unit, are we talking about Heather or Mike or Josh? Who's coming?
Let's say Heather, just because she went okay. through the whole ordeal.
Okay. So Heather comes to the unit. She says, I was hiking in the bush mm-hmm. and I got lost with my two friends and they both got killed by a witch. Is that what she says?
Yeah, pretty much. She would recount the details about the cairns, the sticks, the bundle of flesh, and the house, the abandoned house.
Mm-hmm. So I guess it would depend on how she's able to frame the story. Can I follow what she's saying? Is her manner of speaking logical? Is it clear to me? Is it organized?
So being overly tangential can be part of a prognosis too, right? It's disorganized thought, disorganized speech.
Yes. So it's what we would refer to as, having disorganized thinking. Some other words we would use to describe it would be like loose associations, tangentiality, circumstantiality. So like someone might be very tangential if they go off, as you can imagine, on a tangent, and I can't get them back. They don't come back to the original point. Mm-hmm. Someone who's speaking in a more circumstantial way, they will go off topic, but they can come back to the point. And loose associations is like, you're talking about rabbits because you ate rabbit for dinner, and now you're talking about Bugs Bunny, and now you're talking about Daffy Duck, and you're going all around, making those connections. And sometimes
it's hard. I think we can be a bit like that on this podcast.
It's like, So I'd be looking to see whether I can easily follow her story.
Yeah.
Is it logical in its form and in the way that she's speaking? I would look to see what her manner is like. Is her affect congruent? Is she distressed? Is she distracted?
She's certainly distressed.
She's definitely distressed. So I would definitely look to, and this is actually part of the care that we provide, is we would try to confirm her story if we possibly could. So did she go hiking and her friends are missing?
Yeah.
And I would also consider, okay, she was out in the bush, she's lost. Has she been sleeping? That would be a really important consideration as well.
I wanted to ask you about that too, because sleep-induced psychosis could be a big through line of this movie, depending how you want to read into it, right?
Like lack of sleep-induced psychosis, yeah.
Yeah, of course, it would be due to lack of sleep rather than the opposite.
And I've spoken to you before that sleep deprivation psychosis is something that I've, over the course of my career, become fairly familiar with.
And it's a lot more powerful than people might recognize.
Oh, yeah. It's a good reminder that our brains are a super powerful thing that function really well most of the time, but they're always only ever so far away from functioning poorly. Mm-hmm. And sometimes several nights of crappy sleep could be enough.
Wow. That's kind of scary.
I guess I should say, I'm not talking about a crappy sleep that you don't feel super rested.
No, of course.
I'm talking more like you don't sleep for five days straight or problems. Something like
yeah.
that.
Serious interruption of your sleep, yeah. So you'd try to confirm her story.
Yeah, I would try to confirm her story, and we would probably admit her, and she would probably be observed for a few days, and we would honestly see how it shakes out. We describe it as clearing.
Okay, so is she going to settle in more?
Well, yeah, and these things that we're thinking might be delusions, the idea that it's a witch, that, these things that are odd or bizarre that she's saying, are those kind of things going to reduce over the days? Is her thinking going to clear? And if it does, there might not be much more than follow-up.
Hmm.
If it doesn't, we might be looking at exploring different diagnoses. Like, she is a young woman. This wouldn't be an unusual time to have a first episode of a psychotic illness.
Sure.
So we might be looking at something like that. And also with the lack of sleep, we might also explore, is this a manic episode of a bipolar disorder with psychotic features? Because that's another consideration as well. So I think if Heather came in and if she was able to describe herself clearly to me and she was able to manage her behavior appropriately, we would probably just settle her in, probably offer her maybe some prescriptions if the doctor felt it. I'm not a prescriber, obviously. Mm-hmm. If the doctor wanted to give her some prescriptions to help her calm and sleep and then kind of see how she does over the next few days.
Yeah, maybe some apple juice.
You know what? In her case, I think I would probably do cranberry.
Or the popsicles.
Yeah.
You guys
have
popsicles on your unit, just like the kid units
do? We do in the summer.
Aw, that's nice.
We get them in the summer.
What about Jell-O?
We got Jell-O. We got rice pudding. We got...
Oh, she'd be so happy to make it to you guys.
Oh, she'd be so hungry. Poor
it
thing.
It would be such a relief.
Yeah. Here's a turkey sandwich.
I agree, though. I mean, you know, obviously, it's an extreme case. It's just a bit of a thought experiment, right?
Yeah.
But I think that for me, in my work with kids, it can be difficult, too, because a kid can be old enough that you're working with them on your own.
Mm-hmm.
And it might not be as old as some people think, too, that their parent isn't with you during that session. You know, not that they're not invited, but that there might be times where you're meeting with the child alone. And kids under the best of circumstances are unreliable narrators. I don't think because they're liars. I don't think because their memory is bad, but I think because their own personal internal experience is so much more real to them and potent to them than maybe adults who might be able to sort out the facts a little easier sometimes. Mm-hmm. So that's why, you know, in an education context or my friends are asking me about what their kids are saying, I'm saying, you're going to want to follow up on that to talk to the people who are involved so that you can, you know, get a really clear sense of what happened, because sometimes kids can just be unreliable narrators. Mm-hmm. So for me, definitely confirming, okay, what's going on? Like, did this kid really do all these things that they're telling me about? Mom, dad, can you confirm that? Right. Because that's number one, because hard to diagnose someone with a delusion if you can't do anything to find out, you know, how much of this is true, right? So that must be difficult sometimes when you have patients who you're not as familiar with who are telling you things that you might find hard to believe, but they're contextual, right?
Yeah, because sometimes you have bizarre delusions where you can go, okay, that's something that could not possibly be true because it defies the laws of physics, right? You know?
Right.
And then there's other times that you speculate, okay, seems really far-fetched, but could technically be true.
Right.
And then there's other times that you're like, that definitely could be true. And so we definitely have to look into that.
Yeah.
And we've had that happen absolutely where we just, we have even had doctors say things like, you know, we're going to have members of our staff follow up with members of the community to see, is there a person that has been harassing members of the community?
I will say it's certainly always worth doing the checking because I have had a number of cases that spring to mind because they really made me feel upset, actually, because we might have been attributing some physical symptoms like stomach ache, you know, stomach illness, that sort of thing to anxiety, let's say, and then come to find that a child was dealing with an undiagnosed medical issue. So I have had that happen enough in my career that I'm very cautious about that. But you just feel bad. Maybe it went on longer than it needed to, or who knows what.
Yeah, and you know what? Somatic delusions might be some of the hardest things to suss out, because that's when a person is telling you about a bodily experience that they're having. And there are definitely times that someone could tell you something and you think, well, that doesn't seem likely. I don't know why you'd be having that symptom, but you can't feel what they're feeling. So you kind of need to exhaust, and our physicians and any good psychiatrist would, you kind of exhaust as much diagnostic energy as you can to try to rule out whether or not they actually do have something medical, physical going on that could be causing that symptom. And then when you have done that, then you start to think about, okay, maybe it's somatic delusion. But it's difficult sometimes because some things are so subtle and aren't easy to diagnose, right? Like, what about like fibromyalgia pain and that kind of thing, right? That's like hard to diagnose. Versus if someone tells you, you know, what could be a somatic delusion, and they say, oh, my jaw is broken. And then you do an x-ray of their jaw and their jaw is not broken.
Categorically.
Then
you're like,
yeah, exactly. Yeah. Then you can go, okay, no problem. For I know sure. that that's not the case. But then, yeah, if someone tells you, you know, I'm having this diffuse body pain.
Yes.
That's really difficult to sort out.
Yeah, you're right. I found that interesting, at least, to consider, okay, if one of these people made it out, what would be the next step for them? I would certainly hope it's a hospital.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, they'd have to do a whole bunch of kind of investigating to see, were these people in the woods? Were they making a documentary? Where are these two other guys?
You know what I would do? I'd say, Heather, can I have your written permission to contact your family members?
Oh, big time.
And speak to them and get some collateral from them. Okay, I'm imagining Heather comes in. It's like 7:30 at night.
Shift just started.
Yeah, my shift has just begun. I'm going to sit her down. I'm going to have this conversation with her. And then I'm going to tuck her into bed, give her a bunch of snacks, make her nice and warm and cozy, and say, you know, you're in the right place to get help. We're going to observe you for the next few days. Make sure you're doing okay.
Mm-hmm.
Here are some of the things that I say to try to reassure my patients that they're in a safe place, especially someone who might be kind of scared like Heather. I say, 24 hours a day, you are going to have a nurse assigned to your care. You've got someone looking out for you 24 hours of the day, every single day. You've always got someone to seek out to ask for help. I'll finish my conversation with her and say, if anything else comes up, if you need anything at all, tell me, I am here. That's what I'm here for. And I'm going to encourage that. And I also say, being here on a psychiatric unit, you have a psychiatrist assigned to your care.
Right.
They are experts in their field. They're a specialist. So they're here to help you. And I think that you're in the right place to get the help that you need. And I'm going to tuck her into bed and, hope that she gets some much needed sleep.
Well, I wish Heather could have gotten that. Unfortunately, I think
she's dead.
I think she's dead. Well, guys, we want to say we really love this movie. You got to take it for what it is. It is not going to give you the same kind of experience that some blockbuster horror movie will. It is totally unique, and it is also kind of legendary, right? So I think for when you and I grew up, the Blair Witch was a big one. People were talking about it on the school ground, everything, and quite confident my dad took me to see it in theaters when I was way too young. But that's also something I hear from a lot of people who are into horror. It's like, I started watching these movies when I was like 10.
They had a loose cannon of a dad who just showed them stuff.
Or someone in their circle.
I feel like it's usually the dad.
I think Kate Thompson told us that it was her dad, right?
She would watch with her dad too.
One day as well, we will tell you the story of a great lady named Marion who we can also probably attribute for a lot of this stuff. But any final thoughts on this movie, Jenna?
Yep, I think that I would fight tooth and nail anyone who tried to tell me that this is not a modern classic.
Oh, it sure is.
I think it's an absolute
classic. According to us, it's a vintage classic. Because
you're right.
We have the cutoff for modern and vintage for when we're flip-flopping back and forth. That's 2000.
Yes, our audience might not be aware, but when John and I are choosing which movies to review, we actually do have a pattern where we alternate between vintage and modern movies.
Yeah.
And our cutoff is the year 2000.
Just made the cut.
So this just makes it into the vintage category at 1999. So I love it. I am genuinely scared by it. Personally, I kind of think no notes. I think it's perfect for what it is.
Me too.
I wouldn't change a thing.
I wouldn't want to see 2, 3, 4 movies exactly the same.
No.
But this movie, I agree, there's no fat on it.
Yep.
And you know what? I just think that it does what it's trying to do in an expert fashion.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it is honestly astounding what it's able to pull off with the amount that it actually has in it.
Yeah.
Quite scary, quite unnerving, quite frightening, stuck with people, really, really was impactful to them and made them feel afraid, which is what they were going for. No monster to speak of. They probably don't even have an actor that is credited as the witch.
There is
there is none.
There was just a set dresser.
And
I'm
yet
sure.
She looms heavy in the public consciousness, right? Which is just pretty amazing. And the amount of dread that you can churn up just by having some bundles of sticks hanging from string, right?
Yeah.
That you probably could have had your kids make for you over the weekend to help prepare for that shot. It's just incredible, actually.
I think it's the perfect version of what it is. I would not change a thing. And thank you for coming along with us to watch and review this movie. If you can, rate and review anywhere that you listen to this.
Yes, it really helps to get the podcast out there.
It goes a long way, and it makes us personally just very excited.
It makes us happy, too, if you care to know.
We're completely delighted to see any reviews, to hear from any listeners.
Yeah, any mail as well. The fearresponsepodcast@gmail.com. We love to hear from you guys.
Or reach out to us on Instagram at the Fear Response Podcast. We really appreciate it. Any listeners who are with us, like, we appreciate you being here so much. And we look forward to next time. Thank you very much.
Yes, take care, guys. Thanks. Just to clarify for our listeners, a loony is a nickname for our Canadian $1 piece.
Yes, he's not making like a derogatory statement about people with mental illness.
Which is worth about 60% of an American dollar.
Yeah.